It's Wednesday, December 3rd, 2008, and you're listening to episode 126 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 57 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
My name's John.
My name's Pat.
Don't forget me. Jeez.
Yeah, wow.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. That tells you what Dan really thinks of.
Chris is our own child of a lesser god, so.
And Chris, you know, you're the apprentice Fear the Booter. You're not even like the probationary Fear the Booter like Pat is.
No, it tells you the way around. Pat was the apprentice and Chris is
back on.
Chris
on probation after the sandwich board?
Oh, Chris was a full-time host. He was moved back to probation because of the sandwich board.
Gotcha.
We're trying to see if
It wasn't a sandwich board. It was a banner held aloft above my backpack. And it was quite awesome, if I may say so myself.
You said it was a sandwich board.
No. One of those Dan John turned it into a sandwich board.
No, I don't think that's what happened.
This is Fear the Boot, so now it was.
Yeah.
That's right.
There you go.
I said it, so it's true. Mm-hmm. So, Chris, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Chris.
Yeah.
In case anybody cares, wow. If anybody gives a shit.
Wow.
All right, well, let's talk about the one thing we do care about with Chris. Chris's love, his silly cartoony love, is about to feed a village. I was directed to a charity that is put out by World Vision, which some of you listening to may be familiar with, where you can get on there and we can pledge livestock. And they have a dollar amount, which each item of livestock. And if we can get the donations to meet that item of livestock, then what they will do is they will actually purchase that particular animal and will donate it to a village in a third world country that desperately is in need of this for sustenance or for farm labor, for whatever. So it sounds a little silly, but this is actually a really serious, really good charity. And here's what we're going to do. We mentioned several episodes ago that we were going to ransom Chris's BattleTech love letter off for a charity. So we are putting it up against a dairy cow. If you, the Fear the Boot listeners, can put together enough money to purchase a dairy cow for a small third world village. And
this doesn't have to be a big dairy cow.
Well, no, the village is small.
Oh, the village is small.
Then we are going to release Chris's love letter. The cow. We're going to send the love letter to the village, and you, the Fear the Boot listeners, are going to get fresh milk.
Excellent.
Nice.
So when we send it in the mail, it's just going to be, you know, standard post office ground. So I wouldn't suggest actually drinking the milk.
The hard part will be boxing it up.
Yes.
All right. So in all seriousness, here's what we're doing. We are going to put up a link in the show notes to this charity, and we're going to do this for a couple weeks.
Third world country, a grilled cheese sandwich.
That's right.
Yes.
If we can get together the money to donate a dairy cow to a real village, this is not a joke. If we can get a real cow to a real village in need, then we are going to release Chris's love letter. If we cannot meet that ransom, then I'm going to eat the love letter so that no one will ever know what it said.
That's kind of gross.
Mm-hmm. I'll see how many of them I can actually find, because there was one item in there that was like the top dollar item that was, it was like
well,
a whole
life. If you've got more of these, then we can start doing add-ons.
We had several.
It's just,
How many can you find?
It's just a matter of how many I can find. And now the trick here is, though, is that the one that I just brought up a couple episodes ago, that was one that had the Lyran Commonwealth letterhead on there that I had made, took a hard time of making.
Give me a wild guess. How many of these letters do you have?
Oh gosh, this is a long time ago. I'd have to say maybe we'll just put it in an even half dozen. Is how many probably total were written.
Why don't we do this? The big entry is going to be the cow. The cow's what gets it started, but they sell other wildlife. So if you guys can get past the cow, we'll give the first one, and after that, we'll start adding on much cheaper livestock.
Like every additional goat, another letter.
Like if you can get another goat on there or something, or a chicken, we will do another letter until we have completely fed a third world country, completely humiliated Chris.
I've got to see how many I can find, and B, I do reserve the right to edit out any of the dirtiest stuff that might be in there. So
okay, that's fine. No. You can redact them.
No.
Well, if it's not G-rated, I wouldn't read it on air anyway. Oh, so you can redact those cards.
This is communism.
But
we won't talk about a trip to the bakery to get those types of things.
Set loose the ferrets.
I also do have to give credit where credit is due. I was directed to this charity by Chris Engler over from WAP Caplets, and he's actually been doing this charity for himself. And he put up for two cows, and last time I checked, had about 80% of them done. And I was originally going to get involved with Fear the Boot, get involved with his little barnyard purchases. But by the time I looked, they were basically complete anyway.
Let's send everybody a mass email. Barnyard fun. Click within.
It'll work. Really. I'll click on
you
it.
You know, as cool as this charity is, I find this whole thing just be utterly ridiculous. How anybody could really actually care about my college-age romance with my future wife just blows my mind.
Care to send something to the... What? Well, he said, I find this whole thing ridiculous. He said, as much as I like this charity, I find this whole thing ridiculous. I thought you were still talking about the charity.
No.
Like, how anyone could actually care about, and I'm expecting something much more offensive to follow that.
The charity is great, and is a noble cause, and actually is very innovative, if you ask me. That's a charity I can get behind, but hey, you know, whatever. Whatever turns people's boats, whatever. I'm good with that.
We're going to end up with like a third world ranch going on here. It's going to be awesome.
Oh, this village is going to be fat and happy by the time this is all over with.
All right. So definitely get out there and do that. And even if you don't really care about these letters, this is a legitimate charity and you really are helping people in need. So we're going to go ahead and run this through the holidays. I actually have another charity at Fear Boots going to be picking up year round. But right now I'm talking to some other podcasts, see if they want to get involved in it. So until I know the details there, I don't have anything more to say on that one, except that this one is going to run through Christmas, and somewhere in there we're going to be starting up a second charity, which we're going to probably keep for a long term. Now, also, don't forget to send me via email your cheat the game tips. If you've got one, be sure to send it to my email address. Keep them short. I don't want to be reading six pages to get to the point, so keep it down to a couple sentences. Tell me how to pronounce your name, and if it's for a particular game or system, be sure to indicate that, but pass along the tips for breaking the game and screwing the game master absolutely everywhere you can. It's time for us to stand up and fight back against that second class of citizens, those game masters that work to keep us down.
Yeah, I'm really interested because we've got a game. Dan's starting up a game soon, and I need to know how to utterly obliterate it and destroy it. Because I haven't done that to a game yet. I've left it to these other jokers so far.
What you should do is start by subtly insisting that you take over the command chair and run a different game, then outright demand that. Then get the GM chair and crash the game in two.
You know, I have had a lot of problems with that in the past where I've constantly mm-hmm. you know, just forced my way in and said, I'm going to run a game now. I'm just going to run the game.
That's right.
It might be our personalities.
Fear the Con?
Coming Fear the Con up. Two.
I have two we, copies. Two.
We have two cons. It's coming up March 6th and 7th. That's a Friday and Saturday at the start of, obviously, March next year. Don't forget to go out to our website at fearthecon.com. And we now have, you can sign up. We're looking at tickets being $15 in advance, $20 at the door. The
highway robbery. I actually tried to talk Dan into bumping him up higher, but he refused. He's like, these people need beer and gaming, and I shall deliver it to them.
I am like the Dionysus of the RPG world. I just wander everywhere, largely naked, with a snake around my waist, handing out beer and gaming to all that come near, and striking down the kings and rulers that would oppose my ways and not respect my festivals.
He's a registered sex offender in 13 states.
I had a red pumpkin this year.
clearly, he's a fan of Greek. All right. So,
Fear the Con 2 coming up here. Yes. Big things we're looking for right now.
We have to have, this is the time to decide and sign up, we must have game masters.
Yes, and we will do the same thing we did last year. If you take the time to come in, run a game, and do a good job, and everyone's generally satisfied, the prize support that we get in, and last year the prize support was extremely generous.
And it's going to be bigger this year, yeah. I'm sure.
So the stuff that we get in, the game masters are going to have first pick of. Everything thereafter will hold in a general raffle just to anyone that's attending, or we'll find some similar way to give them away.
We'll definitely distribute the goodies.
But, and if you want a GM and you're out of ideas, I will let you borrow Earthshaker when I'm not running it.
Well, you are running Savage Earthshaker?
No, I'm running regular Earthshaker. I'm running first edition Earthshaker. Oh, Savage my God. Ass.
I tried to talk him into running two parallel games, one of Communist Gnomes and one of Freedom Fighters.
Well, there's
Fighters.
No content in there for the Communist Gnomes.
John?
But I could probably make it up.
There you go. Do I have to go find Zeb Cook's email address?
Actually, if you could get Zeb Cook on the line for this, that'd be amazing.
I should do that. I'm going to track down Zeb Cook if I can.
I think it would just be an
You know what? Not only track him down, but get him to write like a mini sequel or prequel to that mod.
I think it would just be this endless stream of cussing if we ever got him on the show.
No, I admire this man's work. I'm going to run this friggin' game. I'm not joking. It's actually not that terrible. I've read it cover to cover.
It's not that terrible.
There's a ringing endorsement.
It's easy to pick it up and just say, oh, look at this idiotic artwork. This is crap. These stats don't make sense, and this concept is moronic. And all of that is true.
If you just play one game this March, play Earthshaker, because it's not that terrible.
If you could just sift out the manure, there's corn in there.
John G. says Earthshaker is somewhat adequate.
There is a festively Soviet hymn with the gnomes hymn theme. And,
I tell you, marginally better than walking on broken
glass. I think
that
I have two games that I have a must sign up for. One of them is John's first edition Earthshaker.
And Chad's in the game. Now I know that.
And the other one is Ed's Savage Ghostbusters. I cannot wait for that. So, I'm shivering in anticipation.
I think I'm going to add addition to my Transformers games. I'm probably going to do a Descent game. I got a scenario I'm rolling around in my head that I think is going to work. But if you are interested in coming, then be there. If you're not interested in coming, be there. You don't want to miss this again. And
if you're not interested in role-playing games, show up and drink lots of beer.
Yeah, I mean, for the ticket price alone. Are we doing two full days of free beer again?
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
And on top of that, we're going to have board game checkout and all that kind of stuff again. We'll have other stuff going on. So even if you don't want to sit in on an organized game, you can still just hang out and do some Catan or something.
Let me ask you a hypothetical question here.
Go ahead.
For the price of one $20 bill, how much beer and role-playing could that get you in an average day?
Well,
it can't even buy you a rule book.
Assuming you had all your role-playing material to begin with.
So get you a...
And you went to Liquosto and bought Colt 45s, probably enough to put yourself in the hospital.
But
if you wanted quality role-playing game and quality alcohol...
Over the course of 2 days.
You would probably have to go to Fear the Con.
Yes.
So,
especially if you wanted Earthshaker.
FearTheCon.com. Definitely stop by, sign out, be there here in St. Charles, just outside of St. Louis, March 6th and 7th next year. And if you are interested in game mastering, please sign up.
I'll be there and I'll be running stuff.
What are you running, Chris?
What are you running, Chris?
I know for sure I'm going to run a session of Succession Wars. AARP.
Wow.
How long have you been saving on that one?
That just came to me now.
Well, basically, what you have to do, in how that session works is you have to roll a d20, and that denotes how loud you tell people to get off your lawn.
So, Chris, what are you thinking about running?
I am running. I'm going to run a session of Succession Wars for sure.
That sounds fun.
But then, that'll be a little bit longer. But then I'm debating with myself what else I should really try to do.
Are you still considering running that role-playing game for beginners thing? Like
the, you know, yeah, that's actually, yeah. That was it.
And I actually volunteered to run that too, which I will do.
Mm-hmm. Yep, trying to do the gaming for noobs. And then, but yeah, other than that, I'm not really 100% sure what the heck I'm going to do. So.
And also I want to,
but I'm going to do something.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm just going to say, I'm basically going to take the GM and grenade, and I may not sign up to play in any events. I may just run as much as I possibly can and just help people out.
I am probably not going to run anything, because this is what I did last year. I didn't run anything, but I was available. If somebody didn't have enough players, I could jump into that. If the GM went MIA, I could jump into that. If there was just any kind of issue going on with the con, I was available. So I'm only going to do very minimal stuff. But one thing, this is the second thing that I kind of want to put the call out. We don't need them as bad as GMs, but if you are any kind of semi-professional or have something to say or have some sort of credentials of any sort that involve something geeky or role-playing wise, we are also doing panels at Fear the Con.
Or at least we're considering it if we can get enough interest.
If we can get people to do it, yeah.
This will not be a panel con. This will be a gaming and party con.
Right.
But if we have folks who know things,
there is time. We do have a little bit of time blocked aside for different panels, but the only panel that we have now is we are going to do a Fear the Boot live event where it's just like Gen Con, where we're going to take questions, we're going to record, and then after we're done with that, then there's going to be a small block of time for panels. And it's something we're going to try this year, see if we can get somebody to do it, see if we can generate some interest in it. So like I said, if you have a subject you're willing to talk about that you have some sort of expertise on, please get in contact with me, chad@feartheboot.com, and we will work something out.
You know, we talk about something every week that we have no expertise on.
The whole theme for today's show is going to be screwy arrangements and screwy setups around the gaming table. We've got several of them that we're going to go over, and I think we'll get to them all today. If we don't, then that's no problem. That just becomes fodder for, 127, I guess, will be the next show. So let's get straight into it.
Wait. Before we even get in straight into it, I think you need to define what you see as being traditional.
What's your traditional nuclear game table?
Oh
setting?
My god! If you can't pronounce that word, family. I'm going to reach the microphone. And kill
my
you.
Definition of a nuclear that was my chair. Game setting.
Nuclear.
Well, okay. The typical one is you have a rule book, you've got a system, you've got a game master, and 3 to 5 players.
Ooh, I said 4 to 6.
And what are each of them doing? You got to lay it out so we have a baseline.
Fighter, wizard, cleric, thief. One of them doesn't care. One of them is the obligatory girlfriend. One of them is a power gamer. I don't know what the other one is.
Three of them are John.
I hate the obligatory girlfriend. She just does not want to be there.
But the obligatory girlfriend can be useful.
See, I would not put the obligatory girlfriend at the table at all.
This is all part of the initiation,
baby.
Trust me.
Only because she's never, that's never been my experience at all, is to ever have the obligatory girlfriend at the table. It just doesn't happen.
It's happening.
Well, there were obligatory girlfriends to have, but they just were never at the table.
Maybe in Minnesota you don't have girls or wherever you come from, but yeah, down here we got girls, and sometimes they're like, I want to be more involved in your life. And I'm like, you don't even know what an RPG stands for.
No, the ones that want to be involved in your life, they're A-OK. The ones that can't stomach the thought of you doing anything without them.
Yes.
And decide to join the game.
In.
Those are the bad ones.
Or the bad one where your friends are like, or the friend who has the girlfriend is like, oh, she'll love it. She's into it. She's great. I love her. It's perfect. Wonderful relationship. I want her involved in everything in my life. And then she's not quite at that level in the relationship.
Yeah.
And then she comes in and is like, yeah, I'm here.
So, now that Fear the Misogyny is out of the way, what?
Because it's all girls. It's never a guy.
Yeah.
We're talking about everybody rolling their own dice.
Okay. Actually, that's not what we're talking about.
I roll my own dice.
Okay, well, I have no idea.
I roll my own.
I'm just so baffled that we don't know what the traditional role-playing game group looks like.
Why don't you just get into your definition? Tell us what you want to tell us, and we'll take it. Chris, I will destroy you.
Hit that button.
I'm sorry. So, anyway.
Oh, there he goes
again. Eat your soul.
That's an AV check. That's not going to...
No, I'm just playing.
He's just...
I was like, that's not going to mute Chris.
Well, what I'm saying is, though, that the role-playing game community can't even define what a role-playing game is.
All right.
And so
true.
How can...
And I was getting a little whimsical with my definition of a gaming group.
But what's wrong with that? How can we define what a role-playing game group is?
I think it's much easier than people want it to be. There's this great...
No, I think that we're
counterculture.
We can say,
well,
what,
there's this great desire within the culture to say, well, nothing's normal and you can't define normal. BS. Normal has a meaning other than socially acceptable. It's a mathematical term, you know, within a data set, average value is a normal value. And I forget which one's a mean and one's a mode and all that crap.
And I certainly don't care.
But the point being,
I
though,
took research methods that forgot all of it.
Normal has a specific meaning. So if you look over the gaming groups in America and you can figure out the size of group that most of them fit within, you have the normal size of a gaming group. If most of them have a GM using a rule book, you now have a normal trait of a gaming group.
And if Zeb Cook writes for 4 to 6, then 4 to 6 is right.
If you are playing that Zeb Cook adventure between level 4 and 6, you could say that is normal or normative.
The majority is D&D. And the majority of people play 4 to 6. I mean, as what John jokes about.
So you could say that is, in the sense, the most normal game is Dungeons and Dragons. But the point being,
I think there's a lot of people out there who would vehemently disagree with you.
I don't see how you can. I mean, it's once again, this is not a subjective thing. This is not my take on it. The word has a specific
majority.
Yes,
it defines the.
Yes, it has a. The word has a mathematical meaning. It's not a subjective.
Then I know very little about the normal.
Fluffy as most people want to make it, but here's my point. I think that most of us understand what a typical gaming group looks like. If you walk into a gaming group where they're using no dice at all, and they're not even playing Amber Diceless, they're just kind of making it up as they go using a traditional D&D setting, this is not normal. Doesn't mean it's wrong, but it's not normal. Okay, it doesn't fit within that mathematical norm. And if you walk into a gaming group where there's 15 people at the table, this is not normal.
Those are bad. I think I played with 11 PCs once.
If you walk into a gaming group where it's a GM and he's all by himself, that's just not healthy. But it's also not normal.
Well, it's safe, it's clean, and you won't get diseases.
This tangent has nothing to do with today's topic, but somehow I'm guessing it's going to be the most talked about part of the show.
Yeah.
But let's get back to the original topic, which is people that have setups around their gaming table or little traits to the gaming table that fall outside of that norm. Chris,
Yes.
You were talking about a game in which the DM has complete control of the dice, that no one at the table rolls any dice under any circumstances outside of the GM, DM, referee, storyteller, whatever it is in your system.
That's called a paranoid person.
I've already got the shakes just from you describing that system.
I would never stand for it. I would never stand for such a thing either.
It just, I mean, even if the players are contributing with what they're doing, I'm going to attack him. I'm going to cast this spell. I'm going to go over here and do this. I'm going to try and swing across the chandelier and do this. Even if you get to describe those things, but yet don't get to roll your own dice to determine that, as neat of a story and as neat as it might sound, as the GM describes it back to you, you're still essentially surrendering control. Now, granted, you're still surrendering control when you submit to dice rolling anyway, but yet you still feel as if you have that element of control because you're the one rolling dice,
I don't understand what your guys' issue. I think there is an issue with it that I have, but it's just like, you know, oh, I don't get to roll my own dice, and that makes me angry, and I lose this connection and this control. I'm like, I don't care.
It's just the throwing of the dice itself. I know that if I were the GM in that situation, I would abuse the hell out of it.
Bingo.
And every time, my players would be so dangerous, and they're losing. Oh, and then they win.
You know, you're imagining the ring. This is secret rolls behind the DM screen and that sort of thing, and he just rolls it, and you tell me I cast a fireball. And then I'm like, okay, and then as the DM, I'm rolling the dice behind the screen, and I tell you, describe to you what happens.
Right.
That's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. You don't spew any numbers back to the players. You just spew descriptions.
My issue with that is not the loss of control. I don't care who rolls the dice. Hell, I don't even use dice anymore. I've got this iPhone app that rolls dice for me.
Oh, my God, with the iPhone again.
I don't even care. To be honest with you,
Pat, I heard Chad has an iPhone.
Don't make me take your iPhone.
I heard you guys have really shit phones too. But my problem is the DM is probably like what that says about the DM. He seems just a little overly paranoid to me. That's my problem.
Several objections.
Wait a second. I have a counterpoint to that, Chad.
You got the Google Android? Is that the counterpoint?
No. But the GM may not be doing it out of a feeling of paranoia or a desire to have complete and utter control. What if he's doing it to enhance the story that's being created in this game?
I can't how much damage my fireball rolled. That's not.
Well, yeah. No. But it's a response to the descriptions that the character that, players are providing.
I don't think that I would come off and say, the GM is totally wrong in this situation. I have to roll dice. I kind of see what you're saying. It's like, what, I can't roll and count up my own dice for my fireball damage? How does that affect any of what we're talking about here? That would be my problem with it. But if the GM is adamant, he's like, my way of doing this hidden dice thing, it will make it better. My view would be, well, I've never done that before. Let's try it.
Like I said, I
have a problem with it. I just don't have your guys' problem with it.
That's cool.
I haven't stated my problem yet.
Deviousness on my DM.
I think Dan has a problem.
I have a problem with it. I just don't have Pat, John, and Chris's problem with it.
I haven't described mine either, but that's fine. Dan?
What's yours, Dan?
All right. I got three issues with it.
Oh, my God.
Wow. I only had one.
1 to 3?
And I threw it out for the first
time. I barely even got to get on half an issue with it here before Chad cut me off.
Issue one is that I would question why the GM wants to do it. Now, I can see some reason to do it. For example, I want to roll your, I don't know, whatever check behind the screen. And if I tell you, you didn't find anything when you searched the room, I don't want you to realize.
The perception checks and always go on behind the screen.
Right. That's not what we're talking about. I don't even use a screen.
I think the screen mechanic is too paranoid.
I don't either.
No, the screen is necessary. The screen is always necessary.
All right, but
you have to have the screen.
But why not take everything behind the screen then, huh?
But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about every die going behind the screen.
We need a whole show on the screen.
All right, but
I'll argue with you to the ends of the earth that the screen is always necessary.
We'll get to that in a minute.
The tying vote, Pat.
I just use a green door, actually. So anyway, next issue.
So you go behind the green door. Article of obstruction.
Chris got it, but that's okay.
Oh, okay, I didn't get it.
Pat goes behind the green door.
Yeah.
It's a porno.
Though I have never seen
the famous porno.
I've never actually seen that one.
The second objection.
I don't know about porno. I never watch it. Oh. What are you saying, Dan?
Nothing at all.
Come, young man. I have much to teach you.
Whatever you want. You haven't known me very long, Pat.
Come, young man. Is that a different porno that we've never heard of?
I've got a friend that's probably got a copy of that, yes.
There's a former host who I'm sure do.
Hey, Dan, since you never talk, why don't you go ahead and tell us what your issues are?
Owned.
Chris, I hope your wife has chlamydia.
Oh.
I'm probably going to edit that out.
He'll think about it, though.
He'll think about it for half a second.
My second objection is similar to the first, which is that, quite frankly, I don't trust most GMs like that.
Me neither.
You don't trust most people.
Well, yeah.
I don't trust myself.
But I would think GMs would be entirely too predisposed to fudge the dice to get the result they want, either for or against me, rather than letting the dice fall where they may. And there are some GMs I would trust to do that because, like me, they're very, very tied to the yoke of the players ought to get what they earn.
John, did I ever have to hide the dice to fudge them for or against you guys?
No.
I did it right in front of you.
But, yeah, sometimes you didn't even have us roll.
I know.
Sometimes you just whipped it out. Yeah. And while it worked, I think if you were trying to sell the illusion of, hey, you did these choices and then randomness took over and this happened because of that, not because I just farted it out, you'd have to do it this way. You never even represented that to us.
Well, Sam, as a big proponent of allowing the players and the circumstances to throw me wild cards as the GM, I want that level of randomness in there. The third thing, and this is not my objection, but I have seen this. I know a lot of people who would raise this objection, and I think it would be pervasive enough that it would keep me from ever using this setup, which is when you're involved in an RPG, the only tactile thing you do is roll dice. Now, granted,
you can't
control how those dice roll. I mean,
some sort of visceral enjoyment.
That you feel like you did something.
It's like opening up the pack of magic cards.
Yeah. Instead of saying I cast a fireball or even describing it or even LARPing it, it's one of those
that
little extra things.
And
well, yeah, and your third point was actually my biggest point. That's what I was going to say when it got to me, is the act of the dice roll, taking that away from the player, that is... In the role playing setting, sitting at the table, that is the physical connection to the actions you're taking. To say
everybody knows firing an AK-47 is exactly like rolling 3d6.
Well, but what I'm saying is you're sitting at a table saying I'm going to fire.
Saying,
you know what I mean?
Agree
so,
with you.
So all of a sudden now, if you're taking that die roll away from me to say whether or not it goes off, you know, whether or not I hit with it. And he's doing it behind a screen.
So you've
ripped something away from me.
If you get hit with a grenade as a GM, I should just start pelting you with D4s.
Well, I can even remember in our BattleTech games where it came down to, the big headshot or, you know, whatever. And so there'd be this great big moment as whoever's firing rolls the dice, unfortunately, typically straight up the map. And that
I agree. Yeah. Now, I agree with you guys, but my view has always been, too, you know, everyone always uses the argument of, it's the dramatic, you know, will he get the headshot and the die? Slow motion, ba-boom, ba-boom. It's on a 19. Oh, it clicks over 20 and everyone cheers and throws stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For every one of those moments you have 60 moments where you're just tossing dice and failing and succeeding and who cares and picking a lock and talking to a bartender.
Well, I think for that.
But now, Pat, wait, before we get too far away from this, Pat, I got a follow-up question to what you just said.
Okay.
Now, in a quote-unquote perfect gaming table world, Is that visceral connection really necessary? I mean, can you not get the same enjoyment out of genuinely really contributing to a story that you are, as a player, dictating to? Because you are still contributing to it, because you're still deciding what your guy does. And the game master's telling you the results of your actions and determining those via the dice. But if you trust that guy behind the screen and that guy behind the screen trusts you, can't you still get that same set? Because don't you get a satisfaction out of creating a good story in the first place? So do you really need that visceral connection? And I'm just arguing this for the sake of argument, because granted, there was nothing better in Shadowrun than grabbing a fistful of D6 and just shaking them across the table.
Yeah.
And I agree with everything you guys said about the headshot in BattleTech, because absolutely.
As Pat's attorney, I'm going to answer this question for him.
I'm advising my client not to speak.
Several years ago, I was in the Smithsonian. I was some museum in the East. I think it was the Smithsonian. And they had there a moon rock. Like, you know, an actual one of the rocks they brought back from the moon. It was sitting there, like, mounted in a little plaque or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you could walk up and touch it. It was completely open. And you know what? I could see that moon rock. I know where it came from. Unless you're in some wild conspiracy theory, in which case, I guess it came out of California. I know where it came from. I can understand what it's composed of. But there's just something about walking up and touching that piece of the moon. And I would say the same thing about a role-playing game. Do I need to roll the dice? No. If my dice are the only connection I have to the game, and believe me, I have played with players where that's true. And that's a sad, sad situation. And you really need to, I don't know, take some meds or get better at gaming or drink more caffeine or something. But, it appeals to some other part, some other sense, some other part of the brain or whatever that just draws me into the game into another level. I guess something I would compare it to is something like the Nintendo Wii. You know, I can click A on an Xbox 360 control panel and get a sword to swing, but there's something just a little bit cooler about swinging the controller through the air as if it was a sword. And I see the same thing with dice rolling that, like I said, I mean, does it really change anything? No, but it just gets me into the game on some other level.
Yeah, and
it's
I think it depends, sense of surrender. I think it depends on the player, too. Like, for me, I'm a self-admitted, I'm a dice junkie. You know, I've got my bag full of dice. I went through that period of time where I went out looking for cool sets of dice. I've got umpteen bajillion sets of them, everything that looked cool I bought, and so I'll pull out this set for this game, whatever else, what have you. But for me, really, if you were to take those that dice rolling away from me, I would not enjoy it as much. And that's just the way I've role played through the years. It's always been I'm throwing the dice. And for me, like you were saying earlier, Chad, there is a lot of enjoyment out of rolling the 20. There's also just as much sort of enjoyment in rolling that critical failure. You roll a one, there's just as much of a reaction from it. So you've got the real failures and the real successes. And I mean, case in point, we're playing in this system and all of a sudden I describe something and say, I'm going to attempt to hit him, Dan. And Dan goes, okay. And he shuffles his dice behind his screen. He goes, oh, you rolled a 20. I'm like, whoa. Because I didn't roll it. Dan rolled it.
Congratulations, Dan. You just rolled it.
Yeah, thanks for rolling a 20 for me. It's just not the same thing. I didn't roll it. There is a sense of ownership there that people, that you'll get.
See, and I think that's bad because if he says, oh, you rolled a 20, he's not doing it right because he should never say, hey, yeah, you cast your fireball and you did 17 points of damage to each giant in there. No. He should never spew back any numbers to you, because then what's the point?
Right. Okay, right,
I have always hated.
But I think you're going to pick up on the cue that, oh, you just decapitated the guy. You're going to equate your head, oh, that was a 20.
Yes, exactly. See, I have always hated, and this is me kind of swinging more towards that mythical, really paranoid DM with the wall of a screen behind him and all these dice that no one's allowed to touch.
I have always hated dice.
In like fantasy games. And this is more so in fantasy games, where it's like, okay, you go through the crypt and you defeat the ancient evil and you save the maiden and you open up the crypt and there's the body of the dead king, dead for centuries, his body is no more, and there lies his armor, given to him by the queen of the ages. It is armor plus 4.
What? Plus 4? That's huge.
Yeah, well, it's huge. Like, and it's just like...
freaking awesome, man.
It's just like... Yay, I have this heirloom armor plus 4. It just, I've had GMs, DMs, I guess, aren't supposed to describe it like that, but they do.
Chris, go ahead. I'm going to give you a moment to speak here, and then I got a question for you.
Okay. Well, you know, in response to what Chad just said, I couldn't agree with you more, Chad. And that's why I, Earthdawn got that right, because they, all of their magic items, A, had special names to them. And all of them had, the more in game terms, the more you invested into that item, the more you discovered about the game. And for some items, you couldn't unlock their abilities unless you did certain things pertaining to the history of that item. There were no, plus one rings or plus one swords. Everything had a specific purpose and a specific background. And so it helped to create that flavor, which added a ton to that game.
Well, let's get back to the dice rolling, because actually it's starting to sound like we may be able to do a whole episode on magical item or unique item design. So go back to the dice thing.
Deck of many things.
Well, I mean, what specifically are you looking for?
No, I don't know. You kept starting to talk and Pat kept cutting you off, which was a magical moment.
I wanted to argue that particular point with him, because honestly, I mean, I would never endorse or do this type of way at all, because I agree that you need that visceral connection. I agree that there is that secret, a safe sense of surrender, if you'll excuse my alliteration, of throwing, being in control in the sense of, you're the one in control of this randomness, even though such a thing is impossible to do. rather than giving it up to someone. But yet at the same time, I can, like Chad, I can see the other side of the point where if you've got a group that is really into it, where the players make descriptive uses of what they're doing instead of just, I swing. You know, if he makes a descriptive use saying, I'm going to try and do this with my left arm while I'm swinging around to try and get this with my right arm, the GM rolls the dice like he should according to the rules, but then responds with an equally descriptive response to what he did. That's kind of fun because it really enhances the story. And further, in the case of hit points, life points, health, whatever you want to talk about, if the players themselves, not the characters, but the players don't know what their health status is, suddenly walking into that room full of orcs is not just the easy knockdown encounter that it was it always was, because you don't know necessarily how bad you're hurting. And if the game master says, well, yeah, you got a couple cuts on your arm and you have this nasty cut on your side, you have no idea what percentage that translates into your hit points. So suddenly now you've got to be a bit more real in your decisions on what you want to do about your character, because his life really is in the line because you don't know where he's at health-wise.
And I want to get back to something you just said earlier, Chris, is when the player, you know, the group who agrees to do this, there are whole systems built around what something you were saying where, you know, the player just doesn't say, I swing the sword or I shoot the gun, roll 2D, whatever. The whole systems are based around describing your actions and, you know, not so much laying it on thick and campy. I guess it depends on the system, though, but kind of laying on the description and really being very descriptive and cool about it. It beyond just the, wow, that's a really neat way to do it. But there are whole systems out there, especially like the storyteller systems, that reward you for that, either give you extra experience on the low end or give you bonuses to hit, to damage, to whatever, when you start going into those kinds of descriptions. And I think that maybe for a storyteller type system or system like that, where that still does use dice, I think that this, our paranoid GM example, this, that might be a good thing for him. Now,
yeah, and I could never do anything like that without there being dice there, because to me, dice are always a good fallback, neutral arbitrator of something, you know, because then you're not leaving it up to the whims of the GM and what he wants to have happen with the story. Having that dice there, you know, levels that playing field, essentially.
We've gone over my system, you know, my way of GMing without GMing sort of style ad nauseum here, but my personal like way of doing it, I really don't need dice. You know, I really don't need that sort of mechanic to play a game. But as a GM who wants to entertain my players and entertain myself as well, I know that 99% of the people I run games for throughout the entire history of that I've been playing role-playing games and running games, all these different people in different groups want to use dice. Who am I to tell them they can't have fun in that way? I certainly don't really need the dice to have a good game, but why should I take that away? And so I open that up. I don't want to say I let them have that. I don't have that. You know, I don't like using that kind of terminology, but it's like I open up the game to where, you know, we have mechanic and we have dice and we have that neutral arbitration stuff, because that's what players want. I know that like Dan really, really wants for the game to be fair. He doesn't want fudging against him, definitely. And you don't want fudging.
No,
for
generally
you,
I don't. Yeah.
You want to be completely fair and that sort of thing. I mean, I know John that you like pretty crunchy rules, but you're pretty, you know, open-minded guy.
I don't like crunch, but I like them there both as a dampener on my own ability to just run hog wild with the game, like you were saying earlier, Chris. And because rolling dice is fun, and because players like to do it.
Yeah,
I like to do it as a GM.
Yeah. I like to watch my players, you know, when it's, as I was saying earlier, it's like, yeah, for every one critical 20, oh my God, the crowd goes wild moment, you have 100 who cares moments. But I really like to see the players get into it with their little dice sort of superstitions that Dan does all the time. That cracks me up.
Dice voodoo. It's true.
Voodoo, yeah. And, you know, I like seeing the people like Phil, where you had to yell, Phil and Tim, where we had to yell at them. It's just like,
yes, dice
roll
masturbation.
The dice. Oh, just, you know, God. They shake it and shake it. Just roll it. But you know what? Deep inside my heart, that means they're getting into my game.
Right.
That means they're getting into it. And
sometimes
it's just like I'm
the
winning.
Dice masturbators are the big fudgers, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't want to show you it. I got an 18. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Actually, John's right. Thinking through all the people I know that have been that one guy in the gaming group, they're the dice masturbators.
Yes. Maybe they're compensating.
Maybe they don't want to lose control.
You're the boot needs to form a research foundation to look into stuff like this. Is there a connection there? Or is this just the anecdotes we're seeing?
The what? Central Agency we for Role Playing. Or?
CARP.
Oh, crap. Central Role Playing Agency. Oh,
penis?
No.
I mean, what was
your...
CARP.
Actually, there was
funny anyway.
Kipra. There was a group. There was an RPG group called CARP. Although I think it was... because it was the Committee for the Advancement of Role-Playing Games, and they were the ones that fought the whole deaths in the sewers paranoia that went on, and they were...
The name
that,
itself sounds vaguely...
Was that
Maoist.
Michael Stackpole's group?
He was involved with them, but I don't think it was his group specifically. But
I know he did a lot of work to fight that particular case.
Yes.
So kudos to him on that.
Let's talk about other dysfunctions and forms of murder, such as lone wolfing. Or gaming.
Lone wolfing is a form of creation.
wait, no. Just describe lone wolfing to me as you know it to be.
It's when you
one GM, one player.
Those love letters you wrote to your life, that was lone wolfing.
Yeah, I'm not.
No, John, that's called.
No, because there was no dice involved.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, Chad. No, it is.
That was. I would actually, if you had to label it,
it was LARPing.
I would call it LARPing, but I would call it. But I would actually, in this case, call it love action role playing game. It not be live action, be love action.
Oh, that's sweet, Chris.
Isn't that nice?
That's sweet and filthy. So, let's talk about which one you talk about first. Lone wolfing. Let's start with lone wolfing, and then if time allows, we'll get into the
what's
really small group, like two players. Because I think when you move from one player to two player, there's a radical change in the dynamic. Three. Four, five, six, they all seem about the same to me.
I think that lone wolfing is perfectly acceptable and fun as long as you're sitting at least 3 feet apart.
See, I think it's the opposite.
Well.
Probably let's talk about different kinds of games. So, all right, lone wolfing. Let's talk about some of the ways, because lone wolfing, I think it's kind of panned on this show.
Yes, vigorously.
I don't
by me.
Unlike
I don't
LARPing,
have any
I don't think it deserves it. So, let's talk about... I want to talk about some of the advantages of lone wolfing. I want to talk about some of the good things that come out of it.
Let me just understand this correctly.
We're not talking about sex.
Well, okay, we're not talking about bedroom antics with your significant other.
No.
Oh, okay.
Although, out of my disdain for lone wolfing, I have come to observe that that's where it belongs.
Here's the things that I found about lone wolfing. First of all, it lets you keep RP, and if you don't have a group or don't have people that are available on a regular basis, lone wolfing is better than not gaming at all. Now, that's really more of a... I don't know if that's a reason.
Play Warcraft.
If you can get any role-playing going in WoW, you're a mightier man than I. The second thing that I would say is good about, and this one I think is more of a really good thing versus of, well, here's why I'd let it go. You can do a lot of development and exploration of a single character that you cannot do in a larger game. You can make that game solely about this person's life, because who's coming and going from it or what they're doing doesn't need to matter, because one person can have and keep the spotlight, and that gives you the ability to tell stories and explore characters in a way you cannot do the moment you add a second player. And I know this because I used to do a little bit of lone wolfing with Mike many, many years ago, and we had a ton of fun doing it for that exact reason, that because the spotlight's always on one person, you can run a game you could not run if there was...
I remember reading a Dragon magazine, and they said that the hardest aspect of running a lone wolf adventure is how the player heals themselves.
I was going to say
that was the single biggest obstacle
archetype
for them.
Role playing games, you need specialized party roles.
I think Chad was being sarcastic.
Yes, I was.
Yeah. Well, I'm being serious. If you want to play by the dark letter of the book, you've got to.
Yeah.
You've got to either give the GM a bunch of healing potions for you.
Well, and it wouldn't have to be D&D. I mean, so.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm not saying it has to be.
I say the lone wolf games I've played, and I think.
A lot of the systems are not designed for it.
Right.
When you're talking about systems, I think you're talking about, like, the combat tactical end of them.
Yeah.
And it's like, to me, the role playing and the one on one role playing dynamic presents its own challenges that make the tactical end. Who cares?
And I can totally imagine that
I think
you couldn't do the dungeon with the loot and then the lone wolf dungeon.
I mean, even the role playing, but even in lone wolf,
I mean, is there really any traditional lone wolf playing that doesn't involve, you know, the sidekick NPC? I mean, do you really just honestly have, you have the one PC, obviously, but I mean, come on, how often do NPCs that travel with this lone wolf come and go? I mean, they got to be there all the time.
Well, yes and no.
The My Guy Friday to drag you out of the kobold spike pit when you go -9 hit points? I mean,
in one of the games I played in, yeah, my character had a definitive tag along or retainer or whatever you want to call it. One of them, he didn't. And one of the ones I ran, the other character didn't, because it really became more about that person's journey. Now, you would presume that if you're doing pretty good role playing, this character has friends. And since there's no other players there, those friends are automatically NPCs. So I guess you can now start to term them as sidekicks. But they were more than just a utility feature. Yeah, in some cases, offer no utility at all.
Yourself. I've seen that done.
I think the bigger issue that I saw with Lone Wolf Games is the fact that you have to always be on. There is nobody else to fall back on.
That's true.
If you come and you're just not in the mood to role play, or you're just not seeing how to solve this puzzle, or you can't figure out how to convince the guard to let you buy.
You had a bad day at work and you're just like, I want to role play. I want to do this, but man, I wish there was a party here so I can kind of take a back seat.
Yeah, there's nobody to fall back upon. And of course, you also lose the social element of the dynamic. You can't get this really interesting, this kind of the arguments and the bickering and the working off each other and the jokes and stuff that come from having...
That's not exclusive to gaming at all. I mean, imagine how you behave when you're going to dinner with one person versus with four.
I mean, or you go bowling. You go bowling with five guys and you get some pitchers of beer going. I mean, the adventure is not the bowling.
It's, right, yeah.
You know, it's a social... But then you go bowling by yourself. And it's fun. I mean, I've been bowling by myself. If you enjoy bowling, it's fun.
Yeah, I did to practice when I was bowling competitively in high school, but
it was all
I never
business.
Just go by. Yeah.
You know, it's...
If only there were a popular book written about the shifting American social culture in bowling alley. There is one. Continue. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
John really, really loves his bowling.
That's right.
Is bowling a euphemism for masturbation here?
No, yes. It actually...
Okay, thank you.
Yes, it is.
It's called... Okay.
It is.
It's strictly business, just like Chad said.
I actually have no problems whatsoever with lone wolfing, particularly, I think, primarily for the reasons that Dan said. Now, I don't know I wouldn't say preference for it, but if my enjoyment of it, I guess you could say, comes from, I did a lot of choose your own adventure books.
Oh, so did I. I grew up on choose your own adventure.
I did that crap all the time.
Yeah
those and then cool. I even graduated into the TSR D&D
See, those I didn't think
books.
Were as good.
I thought
the classic, you know, who killed
the fighting
Harlow
fantasy ones. Fighting fantasy ones
Your
were the best.
Jonas
I mean, as far as
the best.
Yeah, those were good. Those were good.
But you didn't have equipment. I mean, it was D&D. So there's a whole
one where you did.
Veneer of rules.
No, yeah, they were called Lone Wolf. That was the that was a series by Joe Denver. That was that was one of the best Choose Your Own Adventure series ever. It wasn't the best, but it was one of the best.
I played a different one, and I can picture its cover. I cannot remember the name. I want to say it was called Wizards, Warriors, and You, or Wizards and Warriors, or something like that. And you actually picked a character. There was actually like two or three different characters you could play. And like if you picked the wizard, you got to pick out from a list of spells. And if you picked the warrior, then you got to pick from a list of weapons. And at different points in the book, you got a different story based on who you were playing. And at different points in the book... there would be moments where it's like, well, there's water here you can't cross. If you have the freeze spell, turn to this page because you can freeze and walk across. If you don't, go to this page. And they would kind of catch you to where they would do combinations you couldn't possibly have. So if you were just cheating your way through the book, it'd be like, yeah, you're cheating. You're screwed. Die.
I have. I have
Steve Jackson's sorcery was the exact same way.
I have competitive books like this that are they're TSR books. And one person plays the heroes. And then they get a book, and then the other guy plays the bad guys.
That's crazy.
And they get a book. And it's like a choose your own adventure. It's a really weird. I have
and the
never
winner gets the end of the book first.
Well, I mean, you're doing a story, and it's just like a choose your own adventure. Only it's competitive.
That's weird.
I have never been. I cannot tell you what it's like to play one because I have never been able to convince anyone to play one with me. Ever. And the books are ultra rare.
You failed again tonight.
I know. The books are ultra rare. Nobody's ever heard of
Chad,
these.
Chad, I'd do that. I'd do that in a heartbeat. That sounds awesome.
I would, next time you're in town, maybe Fear the Con. we'll have a little sidebar where we whip out my competitive choose your own adventure books.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
We could bill this as make fun of Chad and the old guy.
Go there ahead. You go. Make fun of people having fun. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go.
In a room full of geeks,
you would make fun of LARPers if they showed up.
Yeah,
I'd probably join in. Actually,
I've Shadowrun LARP before.
Now that would make me vomit.
It was great.
Sir, I mean, honestly, sir, this honestly, show has fun. Standards.
So let's move up from Lone Wolfing to two players. You have two characters, two players, and one GM. Now, in my mind, as I said earlier, I think once you hit three and up, until you get to the obscenely large numbers where they introduce new problems, it's all about the same. Three people, four people, five people.
I don't
see any radical difference in the group dynamic. I mean,
I've played with three people and played with six people, mostly running, and have done a whole lot more. A, done more work for the six people, and B, not gone as deep with their characters.
Well,
and it gets to focus more on my...
I think for me, on six people, you're at the upper end of my tolerance levels anyway.
I really agree with John there. I think with three people, more things get done. There's less disagreement. It depends on the people. I mean, you could have some very contrary people. But,
and there are entire campaigns that are nothing but PC disagreements.
Sure.
Which I love.
Yes. And, you know, I think that with the really tiny, small groups, like I said, it's all about the spotlight. You're either putting the group in the spotlight or sections of the group in the spotlight, mm-hmm. or you're putting one person in the spotlight. When you have three people, you can really move that spotlight around. So, you could really jump.
Similarly, if you've only got two people, one of the advantages you have over larger groups is you can now, you have the ability to move that spotlight quite a bit. You can really get deep with these characters. You cannot get as deep with a lone wolf game, because if guy A leaves guy B, that's problematic for a two-man game. So you cannot really just keep the camera forever following one man. But you still can do...
They did it in Sonic 2. The moral of the story was don't be the tails. Continue.
I will. You could still... They introduced furry stuff in the most recent one, but...
That was in Sonic 2, too.
That's always been in them.
Huh. So,
you're just not a fan of Sonic.
No, I love Sonic, but by furry stuff,
really
I love their
cheese. They didn't have Sonic. RPG is a Sonic game on DS because I love their stuff, but I'm not buying a DS and playing a
Sonic
game.
Well, no, that's in one of the more recent ones, if not the most recent one, second most recent one, they had Sonic making out with a human woman.
Really?
Yeah. That's a new level.
Maybe
for...
I will buy it.
And then Sonic goes Super Saiyan, too.
Yeah. But you can...
Oh, gosh.
The chaos
emeralds. Chris is vomiting.
But you can still do more with those two people than you could as you add more people on up. What are some of the unique challenges introduced by a two-man group?
I think if they get into an argument, it could really slog out. I mean,
that's true.
It's like when you have six or seven people, you can kind of get a bunch of people on your side and influence the other guys. Like, well, we don't like it, but we'll go with the group.
Yeah,
and you don't get that with two guys.
There's no politics in a two-player group. Yeah. It's a relationship.
Yes.
Right.
It changes.
I can speak to this because that's exactly how I started role-playing. When I started, it was... basically my best friend and I played under my first GM. So it was basically,
most of us did.
Huh?
Most of us.
I guess this is not really that big a deal, but so yeah, exactly what you're saying, you know, it was just he and I, brand new players with somebody that had played before, you know, showing us the ropes. But what I found was that it was certainly if one of you has a strong personality or you know a strong idea of what you want to do, it would end up being, well, we're going to do what I want to do. And I was, and like I said, in this instance a lot of it was what Todd wanted to do, and so I was more of the tag along. I was like the support.
That's
cast
right there. One of the problems I would see if you're lone wolfing, one guy has a camera all the time, it doesn't matter what occurs. Mm-hmm. If you've got three mm-hmm. people on up, assuming there's not some serious dysfunction, then any one personality or the attention in general is going to more or less be diluted across the group.
Right. I mean, you're going to get more to a sort of a quasi democracy.
Right. Because it's very unlikely you're going to have a group of people where you've got five people and only one is outspoken.
Right.
Or only one makes decisions. If you do, you have a cult, not a gaming group. But if you have two people, it is very easy for one or two things to happen. Either you get two strong personalities. And I mean, speaking very broadly here, what happens in the two-party system of the U.S., it's not shifting alliances, it's impasse.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to struggle a lot, or you're going to get a stronger and a weaker personality to where if you're not careful as the GM to really pay attention and to really draw out that other person, the game is going to become about one guy just because he's easier to GM for. Yeah. He talks, he gives you stuff to work with, he has insight, he has feedback. The other guy just kind of shrugs his shoulders and says, that sounds like a good idea, and rolls his dice.
It sucks just as bad if both of them are doing that the whole time, too.
Oh, yeah.
I agree.
Well, yeah, if you get two guys who just, you know, both of them are kind of apathetic about the whole thing, and you're going to get complete and utter inaction as well, where it's like,
right,
yeah, we could do that, or we could do that. I don't know, whatever you want to do. Yeah, but no, really, whatever you want to do is fine with me. Well, yeah, at that point, then the GM starts pounding on them with the monster because it hasn't made a decision.
So you need two players who are perfectly agreeable in disagreement, but also never shy and always motivated.
Well, I think...
I don't think these people exist.
I was going to say, I think really more what has to happen is the GM has to accept those two people don't exist. If you've got them, more power to you, you're a lucky person. But if you don't have those two people, then I think really it's just more you as a GM need to be aware of that dynamic and be prepared to handle it.
You should also make sure that the two people aren't in a romantic relationship. Because the ups and downs of the relationship will dictate the whims of your game.
And so will the calendar date.
That's Pat at feartheboot.com.
Oh, I get it.
And that address does now exist.
I was thinking, oh, wow. Wait a minute, if one of them can't show up, the
Yes.
The moon's
Ladies,
not the only thing on 28
direct
days.
Direct your bile.
It's fine.
Direct your bile right at Pat at feartheboot.com.
Just your bile. Yes.
Alrighty, I think that's going to wrap it up for this show. So thank you guys for tuning in.
Good, healthy debate today, gentlemen.
Very.
Yes, enjoyable.
Right.
And I will catch you next time.
See ya.
Later.
Later days.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2008, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.